Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Before I continue, I'm going to be hosting a history Zoom conference on the Bar Colony expedition that would eventually found Lloydminster. It's a very interesting story. It's a story of trials and tribulations and success, and I think you'll really enjoy it. It happens on June 29th at 2:30 p.m., and you can register for $10. Just go to my website, canadaehx.com, or email me at craig@canadaehx.com. Also, if you want to support the podcast, you can. Just go to patreon.com/canadaehx. Sass Jordan is one of our most prominent rock musicians of the past 30 years. She's a Juno Award winner. She's been the Billboard Best Female Rock Vocalist Award winner. She's done music for movie soundtracks, much more. And she's had several hits over the course of her career. I had the pleasure of interviewing Sass Jordan just a little while ago, and let's go to that interview now with a Canadian rock icon. What got you into music?
Oh boy, I think it's more like what didn't get me into music. I think it's just life. I mean, really, let's see. Okay, the proper answer would be that it just seemed to be a friend when I didn't feel like I had one. So it was a way to connect with, I guess, even other people just through the emotion of the music and the emotion of the song or what the lyrics were saying or the, you know, the energy of the person singing. I mean, all I ever heard before the age of about 9 or 10 years old was classical music, interestingly enough, because my parents were into classical music and they never listened to anything else. And my brother and I hadn't discovered that you could turn the dial on the radio and something different would come out until then.
What was it like to see yourself on something like Much Music for the first time?
Very weird, but it was, I mean, it made sense because I made the video, so I'd been there and done that, and I knew it was going to happen, but then when it actually happened, it was odd. Sorry, I'm looking for the right words. It was extremely exciting and very odd at the same time because, you know, when you live in your body, you don't see yourself on the outside. But now everybody sees, you know, everybody's on video or what have you now. But back then, which would have been like 1989, it was still pretty, you know, nobody had cell phones yet, you know, so it was a little bit more unusual to see yourself on film.
Just an extension to that, what about when people started to recognize you when you were out and about? Was it kind of something weird to get used to as well?
Yeah, it was horrifying. It was absolutely horrifying. Because I stupidly had not put together the two facts that if you are on television, people are going to recognize you out of television. I hadn't figured that one out quite yet. And so it was very shocking. But luckily, back then, again, there were no cell phones as such. So, you know, there were people. I mean, it was astonishing to me how people could magically materialize cameras and stuff out of thin air. Even back then, it was pretty astonishing. But, you know, it just made me believe in magic even more.
So over the course of your career, you've had successful albums, you've been on soundtracks, things like that. What are some of the highlights from your career?
Gosh, that's a tough question for me because it all sort of just blends into one big bubble of I forgot the whole dang thing. Best way to stay young, forget everything that ever happened. Getting a Juno, that was amazing because it was so entirely unexpected. That was a shock, a great shock, but it was a shock nonetheless. playing in front of 750,000 people at a concert that the Rolling Stones were playing at, that was a big deal for me. Let's see, I mean, there's so many things. Actually, just meeting fans who said to me, you know, that this song or the music had really helped them get through difficult times in their lives. You know, those are really precious memories to me. You know, because I mean, what the heck else am I really doing this for? Mm. You know, it's to connect with people and to offer some kind of feeling that they aren't alone either. You know, because that's what music did for me. As I said earlier, that's what music did for me when I was going through those times in my life. So to be able to offer that, you know, pay it forward, so to speak, has been a huge blessing, and probably that's the highlight of my career.
What is it like to, you kind of mentioned the Rolling Stones and everything, you know, these people that you listen to or you know about over the course of your life before you start making music and everything, and then you're performing with them or meeting them. What is that like?
Surreal. It's absolutely surreal, and it's happened to me on numerous occasions. I've been lucky enough to be around people that I grew up listening to that I thought were just the most amazing thing in the world. But the most fascinating thing about the whole thing is that everybody is just a human in the end. You know, it's everybody is basically on the same playing field, regardless of money, fame, or what have you, power, you know, worldly seeming power. It doesn't seem to really... doesn't really seem to make a difference in the end. In the end, you're a human being going through whatever you go through, and that was the most shocking, in a way, thing that I discovered through the years, is that people are people, no matter what they are, you know, mm-hmm. no matter what. Yeah.
When you look at Canadian music, we often get overshadowed by America or the United Kingdom, but you know, with the band and Neil Young and, you know, all the way up to today, what do you feel sets Canadian music apart?
That's a really good question. And I say that because I can't think of an answer right off. A lot of the biggest Canadian music stars, people don't realize are Canadian half the time. I don't know that it's a nationality type of thing, so much as it's an individual kind of thing. It just, I think it really depends on the artists themselves, or mm-hmm. you know, the band themselves. There's something fantastically honest about a lot of Canadian artists that I don't necessarily see, but I mean, everybody, it depends on the individual, so mm-hmm. I can't answer that. It's a Canadian type of thing, you know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. how did Canadian Idol come about?
Well, I was asked to audition for this show, this television show that was going to be made, and I'd been asked to audition. Actually, I'd been asked to do a sort of it's like a contestant type show prior to being asked to do Canadian Idol, and it had been the most ridiculous offer ever, like 7 months of the year for $700 honorarium type of thing, you know, 7 months of your life for like $7,000 or some crap like that. And so I was like, nah, I don't think so. When my agent called me, I just said, nah, I don't want to do that. That sounds silly. And then, of course, about 3 days later, they called me back and they said, do you have any idea how much money they want to pay you for this? And I was like, well, no. Why? And then they told me, and I was like, what time do I need to be there? And that's how it started. But it didn't end up like that. It ended up being one of the most fun things I've done in my life. You know what I mean? It was a magnificent experience. We had such a wonderful time. We laughed so much. We met incredible people. I traveled all over Canada, which I really enjoyed. And it was a magical experience altogether. Hard work.
Oh, yeah, I'd imagine.
And a magical experience.
Was it surreal to be part of the Bowie alumni tour?
Yes, of course. Yes, absolutely. Because Bowie was one of my biggest idols when I was a kid, you know. So, and the person who puts it together and who runs it is Mike Garson, who played on some of my most favorite Bowie songs. He played on most of Bowie's songs, to be honest, but some of my most favorite ones, it's him, you know, and to actually be working with him and to be around him and the other people, it was something, it's extraordinary. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Again, it comes back down to that same thing that I said, it's just, the people are people, you know, which is what's so great about them. They're just people, and whatever comes through them, I say just people. I mean, people are magnificent. There's no such thing as just people. But what I mean is nobody is some glorified, you know, angelic being. No matter what they do, they still have the issues that we all face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was extraordinary. And I will probably be working with them again once we are working again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So what about, how did you get involved with the whiskey and wine brands?
I did what I always do. I dreamt it up. I just started, what happens is I just wake up in the morning and a thought drops into my head and I go, I'm going to do that. And then somehow, back to that old word that I love so much, magically, I reach out and things just seem to fall into place. And by the way, when they don't, to me, I take that as a sign that I'm not supposed to be doing that, that it's not coming from the right place. Do you know what I mean?
No,
so
absolutely.
I just go with my gut feeling. And everything that comes to me just comes to me like that. It's just like a thought that drops into my head. And I go, that sounds exciting or interesting or fun, which is my major byword of all time, fun. If it's not fun, I ain't doing it. So I have to find ways to make dusting fun, if you know what I mean. Because I'm only human.
tell me about Rebel Moon Blues.
Oh my goodness, what a lot. There's a perfect example of fun. Perfect example. So the idea to do it came up, which I resisted thoroughly in the beginning for a million reasons. And then I started to get signs and signals from my everyday life that maybe this wasn't such a bad idea. Then somebody said to me, you know, it's not that far removed from what you normally do. And I was like, you know, you have a solid point there. And I started to do research into it and get into it, talk to the band, talk to people. And it just happened. It flowed. There was this magnificent flow that happened with it. And it's one of the best, most wonderful experiences I've had so far, and I intend to continue it.
All right, and you kind of touched on it earlier. I know that COVID-19 is kind of upending everything, but once this is all passed and we're out of quarantine, what do you got upcoming?
Well, I have to get my whiskey on the shelves. That's the first thing. Well, it's not the first thing. That's one of the things. I've got shows most of the shows that I have that I had lined up have been postponed. So I'll be doing those. I'll be getting into the new blues record, and all variety of fascinating and interesting things that I don't want to talk about yet and jinx them.
Makes sense.
You know how it is.
I do. I know. Absolutely. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Canadian History X. And if you did, you can leave a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. And you can find hundreds of articles on Canada's history at canadaehx.com. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.